Welcome to the Spiritual Leadership Podcast with Pastor Paul Chappell, pastor of Lancaster Baptist Church and founder and president of West Coast Baptist College.
Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Spiritual Leadership Podcast. My name is Larry Chappell, and I'm here today with my dad, Paul Chappell, and we have an exciting discussion planned for you today. We are going to be talking, Dad, about your new book, Keep the Faith. And I'm excited to get into the book and some of the things that you've written. But why don't we start by you kind of telling us your heart behind this book?
Well, Larry, as you know, I've been an observer of trends and terminology, and I teach a class of young men. I have pastor friends that are older than I am. And there have been so many new terms introduced to the ministry landscape in the last 10 to 12 years, so many trends. And a lot of times pastors my age and older, we see all these changes and not always for the good, and we don't know where it's coming from. And I wanted to research really the origins of these changes because I believe some of them will adversely affect the faith down the line. And so it's been a long journey of study and analyzing in the light of Scripture what's going on in the ministry world today. Lots of interviews went into this book. I read 30 or 40 other books. I know guys your age like to push back. They want to know that you've done your homework. And so we really have worked to provide a book that doesn't tell somebody what they have to do, but maybe gives some guidelines for those that are trying to go through the same maze of terms and trends that I have been studying.
There's a few things that I liked about the book as I read through it. And the first was just, first of all, your spirit behind it. You wrote in the beginning that in some ways writing this book is a no-win. Some people might think that you're not specific enough, including enough material on separation. Others may think I'm too conservative and criticize my stand as being judgmental. But I'm not writing this book to win. I'm writing this book to help. And you go on to say, you're not trying to be the Holy Spirit for somebody, right, but mainly just show some things that you've observed and studied and believe that other ministry leaders need to be aware of. One of the things I liked was your spirit in the book. The other thing I appreciated, and you already mentioned this, was the abundance of resources that you pull into the book. Mm-hmm. And there's a footnote almost on every single page. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciate that. Also, I appreciate you inviting other voices into the book. There are men such as Dr. Don Sist, Brother Jeff Almsbaugh, Brother Jerry Vines is another one. Maybe you could tell us why you included him in your book.
Yeah, I chose to interview a lot of younger and older pastors. I chose to interview and talk with Dr. Vines because of a shared burden. I mean, I look across the landscape of the independent Baptist world, some friends in the Southern Baptist and Bible Church, but mostly I'm an independent Baptist. He was a former Southern Baptist president. But what I found was, as I first started talking with independent Baptists, and they were saying these terms, and I was like, well, where's that coming from? And they'd say a book maybe written by someone on the left side of the convention, Southern Baptist Convention. And so I'd look into that, and then I'd find lots of quotes of, say, a Presbyterian like a Tim Keller. And then I would see him quoting from Leslie Newbegin or Niebauer and other neo-Orthodox influences. And what I found, Larry, was I found a tracing of a lot of neo-Orthodox, new evangelical philosophy coming into Bible-believing churches. And it wasn't just stylistic, and it wasn't preference. It actually is affecting faith. That's why I've entitled the book, Keep the Faith. And so, whether Dr. Don Sisk or Dr. Vines, they share the concern. Now, they share it within their movement or their context, but there is a concern on the part of conservative pastors for the faith, and it's something that I believe needs to be addressed. And I didn't really think I'd write this book. I thought guys older than me would write it. I kind of waited around, but I do feel it is a vitally needed message for today.
Some of us younger guys have not been around long enough to even see some of the trends. And I think by definition, trends, they come and go. But what you are seeing as you studied and just observing ministry is that some of these trends today, they've been around for a while.
Well, when I hear guys talking about integrative ministry, and when you trace that back to the social gospel, or you hear guys talking about the idea of the redistribution of wealth, which Tim Keller's newest book has a whole chapter on it, And you know where those things come from. They're not biblical terms. And when you hear people talking about missional ministry and you study it out and find most missional ministry is not soul winning at all, or you hear the term gospel-centered being pinned to every facet of discussion, and they're not really discussing the death, burial, and resurrection in those conversations. So you have to ask, where are we going with all this?
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that you did well is you helped us to parse these terms. And there are some concerning things. There are some commendable things behind the heart, maybe, of someone wanting to help. And you helped to parse those as we. As you wrote the book. I want to talk about how you organized the book. And again, we're not going to read the whole book here in this setting. I hope that you would pick up the copy of the book for yourself, because a lot of work has gone into it. In fact, I was reading in the back some of the praise that you've gotten. It may be the most important book written in a generation, one pastor wrote, and some others here, some other recommendations. So grab the book as soon as you have a chance to do so. But you've organize this book in three sections, and the first section is it's actually almost the first half of the book is standing for biblical truth and kind of a historical background. Right. Tell us why it's so important to have that framework in understanding these trends.
Because context is important, and I touch on very briefly the New Testament church, the Reformation, the Anabaptist, but really you come into the last 100 years or so where German rationalism was so influential. And so men began to stand up for the fundamentals and then how that affected the Baptist world in particular. And I talk about some of the moving of the Southern Baptist movement to stand for truth and their battle back in the 50s for inerrancy. I talk about some of the independent groups. I identify which independent group I was trained by. And we talk about some of the recent history. Then I think from there we talk about the introduction of the new evangelical term. It was not coined by fundamental people. Where did that come from? What were the seven tenets of the new evangelicals? To dialogue with those who have different views of science, to those dialogue with those who have a different view on the spiritual gifts, to get involved with social works. These were introduced in the 50s. They were reaching back from there into some of the origins of the World Council. But just to lay a context for the church work and the fabric of the ministry before we get into some of the current trends.
Which is so important. I actually think that if you cut the book in half, it would still be worth getting because really did a great job on the first half of the book helping to give a thorough yet not too not too cumbersome of a historical setting for where we are today. And then the second half of the book, which is really the meat of the book, is the discerning ministry trends. And you wrote at the beginning of this second section, you wrote how we're seeing trends today in culture. We see the trends of biblical illiteracy, the breakdown of the family, rise in pagan practices, hostility to authority, apathy, lukewarm churches. These are some of the cultural trends that we see. And just as culture shifts, ministry as well can shift. And this is kind of the heartbeat behind the book, is some of the shifts that you've seen and some of the concerns that you have for them. So why don't you take a minute and would you read through the trends that you have highlighted in this book and kind of talk us through them and maybe give us a little synopsis for why they're important for us.
Well, we talk about the contextualization trends and the whole argument of contextualization, and we give examples of where that is needed and with all the changes that you mentioned, but also that there's a point to which that argument can turn to conformity and suddenly doctrine is now diminished. And so we get into, I think, a healthy discussion on contextualization. With the missional trends, we talk about all of the idea of the ministries that are involved in helping others in such good ways, but how it's often void of the gospel. And it's just a passion of mine that we keep Christ at the middle from the standpoint of preaching Christ and the gospel. And then on the social justice trends, that's a hot topic today. Certainly there were great works, George Mueller and his works in England, William Wilberforce, who defeated slavery in England. You and I were there at Cambridge and studied one day the great work that he did. But we're seeing now that there's this apologetic, apathetic church developing as they get more involved with dialogue and discussion and apologies than they are with preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. And they're getting caught up in identity politics to the point they're not teaching people that their identity is found in Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's the tragedy, really.
And it can be confusing. Critical race theory, intersectionality, these woke terms that are, you know, somewhat new to us, but we need to know.
Right. Well, we cover those terms, and I will admit, I've learned a lot in the book, writing the book myself. I think a lot of my peers and men that are older than me will benefit, and they'll get an understanding of the mindset of younger men from a chapter like this one on social justice. I wrote a chapter on the gospel-centered terms. I love what one author said, if the gospel is everything, then it's nothing. In other words, sometimes it's applied so broadly. And even, I think it was Tim Challies who said that it's become almost a marketing term, sadly. And so there are certain things about gospel-centeredness that we absolutely affirm, and I can see why some men coming through our movement ran to it, because they don't want the approval identity, they don't want the performance-based acceptance. They want to find their identity in Christ. They want to be centered around the gospel. Their motivation is from the gospel. On the other side of the coin, that term has come to be identified with a belittling of sometimes holiness or righteousness, not even standards, okay, put away the standards, but sometimes it's identified with a more of an ecumenical approach to the ministry. Sometimes that's identified with everything from dating to cooking. So we just really get into the good application and some of the more frivolous and even some of the dangerous, because there are many gospels. And so we need to identify a Christ-centeredness as much as anything.
Yeah, that's awesome. You talk also about some of the radical grace trends, generational trends.
The radical grace is really quite documented, and it was an amazing part of the study for me, because grace is radical, and we believe it's amazing. But there is no question in my mind that right along with those that are getting their identity with respect to worldly terms and trends, the grace movement has been hijacked. And God's grace has been turned into lasciviousness, just as it was in the first century. And I quote many different authors. And what's so sad to me is to see the fallacies of their theology popping up on the social media feeds of young men trained in fundamental schools. And they're doing it almost like a yippee and in your face to their mentors, but they don't realize where it's going to take them. And the subtle encroachment of sin and temptation that overcomes them through time because of their view of grace.
Dad, one of the last trends you highlighted was generational trends, which I think is really helpful, especially coming from a youth pastor perspective. What was some of your heart behind this? What are some of the things that you saw that were concerning?
I was trying to dovetail the generations by starting off with some of the great things we see in the younger generations. For example, they desire biblical teaching and preaching. They're not as drawn to just the flair of things. They want Christ-centeredness. They desire to see a transformational life rather than just external acquiescence. They desire authenticity in ministry. I think sometimes they wrongly judge the older generation as not being authentic, but nevertheless, they desire authenticity. They want to reach their generation. And so those were some great generational strengths of the younger generation. Some of the challenges I think that we found in the study would have come along the lines of a lack of appreciation at times for their heritage, or uplifting authors that were doctrinally incorrect, and sometimes to the detriment of their own church members, because they're turning them into or onto subject matter and authors that aren't going to help them become sound. Oftentimes, promoting conferences and events that were either very ecumenical or doctrinally unsound. So, you know, those were some of the things with respect to the younger generation. For the older generation, sometimes we have had a lack of a listening ear. We have been promoting more of the form rather than the substance. We also have had our weaknesses of pragmatism, just as we sometimes see in the younger. So it's a generational chapter where we're trying to say, here's some strengths and weaknesses of each generation, but where can we complement each other to go forward and reach our communities for Christ?
Mm-hmm. I think it's great. Dad, sometimes here on staff, we together will read a book and we'll discuss it. Mm-hmm. I think this would be an excellent book for pastors and ministry teams
for sure
to read together.
Yeah, I think pastors and their deacons, pastors and their staff, the church is changing so much, the culture is changing so much. And again, a lot of the issues are dealt with in this book. So
you end it, and I'll let you kind of sum up the ending. You end it with reaching forward with the gospel,
right?
Because we can study these trends, but at the end of the day, it's about pressing forward, yeah, and striving together for the gospel.
Yeah, and that's really our passion, is that we want to keep the faith. We want to do so in a doctrinally sound way, and then we want to go into our community and confront the community with the gospel. If you want to do that with some love works, if you want to do that with some different methodologies, again, we grant that. We need to have freedom in those areas. But sadly, we're not seeing our communities penetrated with the gospel like they should be. And so there's a definite call here at the end in the last few chapters with some ways to evangelize and some ways to really not only keep the faith, but advance the faith of Jesus Christ.
So, Dad, this book is hot off the press. Where can we get this?
Well, really just go to Striving Together Publications, strivingtogether.com, and I'm sure there's quantity discounts and things of that nature. There's been a lot of people waiting for this book. I appreciate their patience. COVID slowed us down a little bit. But keep the faith, and the subtitle is Standing for Biblical Truth, Discerning Ministry Trends, Reaching Forward with the Gospel. And that's what we need to do today. And so strivingtogether.com, probably the best place to start. They'll ship it right out to you. We've got a great warehouse full of books over here to serve local churches. And this is to serve the leaders and those that are discipling others and to help young preachers. I'm praying that a lot of Bible colleges will use this for their contemporary theology. Hope they'll look past the fact that I'm the president of a college, get over that for enough time to say, hey, there's valid material here. This will be the contemporary theology text at West Coast Baptist College. And it is a book that deals with who do we identify with, when do we step away from, but it's not a book that's just about bashing for the sake of it. It's really to say, consider your path, remove not the ancient landmarks, go to strivingtogether.com, get a copy, get a bunch of copies right away.
Well, thanks again for listening to today's podcast. Hopefully something we've said has been an encouragement to you. Go ahead and grab this book, if you would, at strivingtogether.com, and I know you'll be encouraged by it. Also, it'd help us out if you left a review of this podcast and share it, maybe with your friends on social media. We would appreciate it.